I am actually going to hand, I probably did have some introductory notes here. Yes, I did. that we, yep, we obviously have got a thorough paper in front of us, and Hans and Neely, thank you for that. I think we have some slides as well from Neely that she is going to cover. I think the first topic obviously is around the progression of the wider corporate reporting debate that we have been regularly considering. So the decision to move forward with the management commentary practice statement in terms of what we've done. One other matter I'd like to refer to before I steal, and I probably have the Hans and Neely thunder, is the appointment of Lee White. We haven't referred to Lee yet in terms of the role of executive director. And what I would say is it really is a very small world. I've known and worked with Lee in various different capacities probably for the last 20 years. When he was with the Australian Securities Regulator and I was actually a member of the New Zealand Securities Regulator, met him then, and he is obviously now, or was until he resigned, the current chief executive of the Australia and New Zealand Chartered Accountants, of which I'm obviously a member and a regular participant. So I think I would have to say that I think that Lee's appointment is an inspired choice, and both his wealth of experience and his thinking ability and style I think will be incredibly useful to the Foundation. So congratulations is what I would say to you. And at that point, I'll hand over to you to carry on.
Okay. So first of all, a few words on our discussions on wider corporate reporting. And indeed, we have discussed this issue earlier in this gremium. And I remember that a lot of the members of the Advisory Council were a bit cautious and told us don't stray too far into areas which you have no expertise in. Now, what I would like to do is to reassure you, because while we have decided to do something in the area of wider corporate reporting, namely to update the management commentary practice statement, we feel that we are firmly remaining within our remit of financial reporting. Yet this is the management commentary is an area where a preparer can say more about his company. It's really broader financial reporting, and it is cognizant of the fact that a lot of value relevant information, which is and the focus will again be on the investor and creditors, that a lot of value relevant information is simply not adequately captured in the financial statements. Information about intangibles, which we largely do not recognize in the financial statements, information about the business model, business strategy, the economic climate in which you operate, and more recently, obviously, sustainability issues also become more and more relevant and can have very big implications for the long-term commercial value of a company. That more forward-looking information is also not captured in the financial statements and can be very important for the investor. So that's what we are going to work on. There are new developments since 2010, when we first developed the management commentary practice statement. There have been new frameworks, like the strategy document here in the UK, which is a very good strategic report, which is a very good document, the IIRC framework. Growing frustration with the short-termism of the financial markets, and the management commentary is the vehicle to expound your philosophy for the long-term value creation of a company. So we believe it will be very useful if we can do some work there. And we have started. Then, by the end of next month, we will certainly issue the conceptual framework. It's in production already. My ambition had been to finish this in my first term. Has not happened, but the delay is not as bad as with other projects, given that other projects took many years more, I'm at least happy that it that we were succeeded in publishing, and that we're going to succeed in publishing it this year. I think the conceptual framework will contain quite a few good improvements. Good high-level guidance on measurement for the board, clear choice for mixed measurement, but some high-level guidance on when to apply fair value and when to apply historical cost or something in between. I believe we have really made progress there. We have clarified the definitions of assets and liabilities, and that has this week in our standard setting already had some success. Last week in our board meeting, we tested our plans for rate regulation, a new standard on rate regulation, on the new definitions of assets and liabilities, and we concluded that indeed regulatory assets and liabilities could jive well with the new conceptual framework, and that really led to a breakthrough in that project. And we now feel very confident that we can bring rate regulation to a good end. Well, we're not going to make an end to rate regulation, but we're going to finish the standards. That's what I mean. Also, in the conceptual framework, we we make very clear that we see profit or loss as the key performance indicator in the financial statements, and that OCI should only be used as an exception. And I hope that we will also, in the conceptual framework, finally reach peace on the issues of prudence and stewardship by giving them the place that they are due. These very emotive concepts in accounting. Accounting can lead to huge emotions, funnily enough. Then, just a few words on the IFRS 17 transition resource group. Obviously, we recognize that implementing IFRS 17 will be hugely challenging, so we have made available many tools for help. For example, we have already issued several webcasts on various aspects of the standard, which you can find on our website. We have attended more than 150 meetings around the world to present IFRS 17, many with investors. And, of course, we have the Transition Resource Group, which brings companies, auditors and regulators together to discuss the implementation issues that might arise around the standard. We had the first meeting of this group in earlier this month. We received 27 submissions prior to the discussions, and that showed that there's a great responsiveness from the insurance industry, and we were able to solve almost all the issues or to explain all the issues around the table. So I believe this was a very productive beginning. I would like to show you a... is it already starting or... I would like to show you a animation that we made around IFRS 17. And
IFRS 17 is the new accounting standard for insurance contracts. It will provide investors with more transparent and comparable information, while companies themselves will benefit from using the same standard across the world. Implementing any new accounting standard can be challenging, and getting ready for IFRS 17 will be a big job. That's why the effective date is 2021, 3.5 years after the standard was issued. The International Accounting Standards Board is dedicated to helping companies along the way. Here are the three ways that we are supporting implementation. First, we have put together a transition resource group to identify and respond to the implementation challenges that companies face. This group is made up of people involved in implementing IFRS 17 from major insurance companies, audit firms, and regulatory bodies from around the world. Anyone can submit a question to the Transition Resource Group, and everybody can watch the meetings. Second, we have developed a wide range of support materials. These include presentations and webcasts explaining the details of the new standard. We will continue developing more materials in the run-up to 2021. Third, we are making sure that the market is prepared for IFRS 17. We do this by educating investors and others about the changes the new standard will bring. In these three ways, we're helping everybody to prepare for the new IFRS standard for insurance contracts. Find out more about IFRS standards here.
Yeah, you can find this little video also on our website. Has had an enthusiastic response. Next slide. Okay. Well, I was just going to tell you. Yes. This is a maquette of the Canary Wharf. We are moving to Canary Wharf in August. We are looking forward to it with mixed feelings. Moving office is always a traumatic experience. Moving a house is a traumatic experience, as you know. And it takes a lot of organization. Our current office, most of you know it, it's cramped and it's substandard, but it's cozy and we will miss it. We are in a nice part of town, and we're going to Canary Wharf, which some say is nice, others have different opinions. It's going to be this building, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Okay.
Yeah. This is where we're going to move. And,
which is his building now?
I don't recognise that as a...
You don't recognise
He works there.
It must be a different Canary Wharf.
I think, yeah.
Anyway, what we are really looking forward to is to get state-of-the-art office space, and also that we will all be on one floor, and we're going to make a good mix of the technical people and the support people. So we hope to create an even more uniform culture of collaboration in our organization. Not that we have a problem there now, but it can always be better, and we are looking forward to that.
And so, Hans, from our perspective, the next time we meet,
yes,
you will be coming from the east rather than from the west to come to this hotel.
Exactly.
Because you'll be in your new office.
Yes. I'm not sure if that makes a big difference. But,
but for anybody who goes for a meeting in the office, don't go that way. Go
whichever way it is.
Anyway.
So it's very easily reachable from bank by DLR.
Yeah.
And then indeed we have a new executive director.
Mm-hmm.
That is fine. Lee White. You will discover very quickly that he is from Australia. He says mate and stuff like that, and has a very strong Australian accent. Nevertheless, we are very happy that he will join us, because he has all the experience here that you need. It's a unique combination of experience. He has the accounting experience. He has the managerial experience, which is, of course, very important for the executive director. Mm-hmm. And he knows our world very well. He knows IOSCO, and he knows all the main players in the world. So we really hope that he can make a flying start. We have been without an ED for more than 6 months now, and we really need somebody there. So we are really looking forward to that. Okay, that was my contribution. Really?
Neat.
Could I have a slide? All right, so good afternoon. I haven't had the privilege of actually meeting everybody around the table today. So as a quick introduction, I've been in this role as the new executive technical director for all of about 5 months now. Previously, I came from the SEC in the United States. I was there for a number of years in a variety of positions working on companies that report under U.S. GAAP and IFRS, following the ISB and the FASB. And then before that, I was with PricewaterhouseCoopers. I worked in London in the early 2000s as Europe was transitioning to IFRS, and then I started with PwC in the States. So I'm delighted to be here, and what I thought I would do is give you an update on some of my key areas of focus, primarily because a lot of them have been impacted by the Advisory Council meeting that I attended I think it was my second week on the job back in October. So I'll highlight some of the key points that you'd raised in October and how that's influencing some of our thinking as we move forward. So obviously, as you can imagine, one of our number one areas of focus is the continued development and support of high-quality financial reporting standards. And as Joanna had mentioned, there's a very detailed paper, and credit goes to April for helping us prepare that paper in your PACs. What I thought I'd do instead is cover some key milestones that we're going to be accomplishing over 2018, and then talk a little bit about the underpinnings of the actual development and support of IFRS, which we've alluded to quite a bit in the previous panel sessions, and it'll give you a little bit more context for that. So in 2018, you'll see on this slide, we have a number of consultative documents that we will be issuing, as well as a few final standards that we will be issuing. There are some other smaller narrow scope amendments and agenda decisions and so forth that will also be coming out. And like I said, those are smaller, so I haven't included those in the slides, and that timing is also flexible. The key takeaway for this slide is that we are very cognizant that there's quite a bit of work in responding to our consultative documents. We know that there's a lot of work in addressing the new accounting standards going on. So we're being mindful of the pace at which we issue these new documents in hopes of making sure that there's not too much stress in the system and too much noise in the system. And then the second piece to highlight in terms of our technical work plan is the research pipeline. There was a question at the October meeting about the status of the research pipeline. And just as background, I think most of you are probably familiar that in 2015, we had conducted an agenda consultation. And from that, there was a list of projects that we were committing to take up at some point before the next agenda consultation in 2021, with the goal of making substantial progress before that date. And this slide lists the projects that are in the pipeline at the moment. And last week, the board made a decision to start in the very near future the five projects on the left-hand side of the screen. So you'll start seeing activity on those projects in the very near future, which leaves the remaining bullet points, the remaining issues on the right-hand side of the screen that will be taken up in 2019 and 2020. So I had mentioned that I also wanted to focus a little bit on the underpinnings of the actual technical standard setting and development and support. And in my mind, there's really three key underpinnings. There's the stakeholder engagement, which we've talked quite a bit about today. There's the staff, which are very key to anything that we're going to do, and then the education and implementation piece. So this slide highlights some of the things that we're doing on the education and implementation front. I think Hans's video is probably the best articulation of some of what we're doing with respect to the Transition Resource Group and the various webcasts and so forth. One thing to highlight on this slide, just in addition to what Hans had presented, is in January of this year, we had issued a new annotated version of the required standards. So this of you that are familiar with our different colored books, this used to be the green books, but now this is an annotated version of the standards that are required as of January 1st, 2018. And the reason that they're so helpful, I think, to preparers is that they include quite a bit of detailed cross-references, and they include a lot of the technical or the agenda decisions from the IFRIC to support the research and the understanding of the IFRS standards themselves. Second underpinning is stakeholder engagement. This slide lists the number of, a number of the meetings that we have coming up in March and April. And the key takeaway here is just to give you a flavor for the breadth, the variety of stakeholders that we engage with and the volume of stakeholders that we engage with. You can see that they range all across the world, and they range across all different stakeholders, from users to preparers and so forth. And this is not unique to March and April. This is sort of the pace at which we're moving at on a pretty regular basis. And then the final underpinning is the staff themselves. It's been an absolute delight to join the staff here. They're an incredibly talented and dedicated bunch, and the board members as well. And hopefully you've had a chance to talk to some of the folks that are around the room today. The reason I bring this up is that what has surprised me when I came from the outside to the inside is the amount of work that this small group of people does on a regular basis. And Hans had listed off some statistics, but just to give you a flavor for what this small group did in 2015 or 2017, they prepared and presented nearly 250 board papers during the year. They had over 300 outreach meetings over the year, and that gives you a little bit of context to the conference discussion that we just had. They spoke at over 75 conferences, and these are not IFRS branded conferences. These are all sorts of different presentation opportunities, and there were a number of webcasts and other sorts of materials that were available. I think insurance alone put out 15 different webcasts on 11 different topics, and they've had tens of thousands of views. So again, it blew my mind once I became more familiar with all of this. And I think it's one of those little-known facts that you don't fully appreciate when you're on the outside, but coming inside, it's just really been quite impressive to work with this group. So the takeaway here is that there are vacancies in the organization. We are always looking for excellent people. You can see some of the criteria, some of the skills that we're looking for. So if you happen to know anybody that you think would be a good fit, please do let us know. We would be very interested in speaking with them.
Or if you want a second chance in life.
There you go. So moving on to the technology initiative, this one was very much inspired by the October Advisory Council meeting. There was quite a bit of fascinating discussion, and Joanna, just absolutely incredible in how you summarized the discussion there. So what I'll tell you here is that our efforts are in formative stages at the moment, but there has been progress since that October meeting, and I wanted to update you. Just as a refresher, in October, there were three main takeaways that we had heard. The first is that you recommended that we consider, obviously, the effect of technology on standard setting and financial reporting. You suggested that we consider the need for additional resources, and you considered, or you gave us the ability to be experimental and innovative, and recognizing that we're not always going to get it right, but don't let that stop us. So in the meantime, what we've done, the first thing you had asked is that we suggest or that we identify a champion to lead the technology initiative, and Hans very shortly thereafter requested that I take on that role, which I'm more than happy to do. But in Hans, as you can tell, you also have a very strong and passionate supporter, so there's definitely interest at the leadership level. Beyond that, we've also gone and posted a position to recruit for a digital lead. And this person would be responsible for researching the lay of the land, responsible for developing a technology strategy to think through the effect of technology on financial reporting and standard setting, as well as what sort of internal education do we need to do to change how we approach our standards, and then liaise with the various relevant parties externally. The other piece that we're working on right now is researching the lay of the land. So there have already been a number of thought pieces and articles and publications out there that contemplate the effects of artificial intelligence, the effects of digital consumption of financial information, and what does that mean for us? So instead of reinventing the wheel, we're trying to get our hands around everything that's out there and then have that be an input into any sort of further strategy development that we would do from there. And then other things that we're working on. So one of the other takeaways that had come out of the October meeting was that we also need to consider technology for internal purposes. So how can we do our own procedures in a more efficient way by using technology? And some of the things that we're looking at, obviously, our infrastructure. We're working on an upgrade to that, and that's something that our head of IT is primarily leading up. There's also quite a bit of effort in terms of our internal processes, and this is tied into the reputation survey and one of the takeaways that came out of that on timeliness, which I'll get into in a few minutes. And then the other piece is related to stakeholder engagement, and you've heard flavors of that conversation today with conferences, and can we use technology to make ourselves more available to people? And then Mark will also be giving some background on the social media strategy, and it's another example of ways that we can use technology to move our process forward. And then finally, you might recall at the October Advisory Council meeting, we talked about the reputation survey. And again, I wanted to give you an update on some of the things that we're doing in that space. To refresh your memories as background, the reputation survey was conducted in 2017, and the idea was to get a sense for how the foundation is perceived externally. Overall, the feedback was phenomenally positive. I think generally it was a good message, but as always, there are things around the edges that can be improved. And what we heard back from primarily you, but from others that we had consulted with as well, is that priority recommendations to focus on are stakeholder engagement and timeliness. So what we've done since the October meeting is that we've completed speaking with a number of stakeholders to just stress test, does it make sense to focus on stakeholder engagement and timeliness? And then we've also prepared an execution plan. So we've developed what are some of the detailed work streams that we need to focus on to achieve those two primary objectives. What's the time frame? Who are the team members that we need to tap into to get those to get that work moving? And the next step will be the execution of the plan. So we'll take you through the plan very quickly. I know I'm running out of time here, but we'll start with stakeholder engagement. I'll actually turn it over to Mark to cover.
Okay, so just very briefly, I think the reputation survey was very useful for us because it's given us an opportunity to address some areas that we knew we had to focus on, but this really gives us a focal point. And so the two main elements relating to stakeholder engagement is, first of all, making sure that we can really maximize what we already do, make the most of what we have and what we're doing. So when it came to working out who we should speak to, as far as the stakeholder survey is concerned, it became clear that we didn't have sufficient quality of data on key stakeholders around the world. So one of the things we want to do is really put some effort in the next 6 months or so into putting in place a really effective stakeholder database. So that's going to be a key area right now. Second, we have board members and senior staff who are traveling around the world, speaking at conferences and events, participating in outreach and so on. But it became clear to us that we didn't necessarily have good enough quality data in order to be able to assess whether the coverage model was appropriate and right. So we're going to put some more effort into making sure that we have that data, and then we can map those requests that we have in the outreach activities against our overall strategy. And when people are traveling, we want to make sure that we're really maximizing the time and the investment that we're making in their presence in that particular jurisdiction. And so we're going to take the opportunity to build programs more than we do at the moment around that travel. And we're also going to work with more extensively with the authorities in that particular jurisdiction, whether it be national standard setters or even members of the various advisory bodies such as the Advisory Council, so that when we're traveling to a particular place, we talk with you in advance and maximize the value of that trip. And then the second part is really just giving greater visibility to the extent to which we are spending time going around the world and meeting the right people. So the IFRS conferences, all of those are publicized, as you would expect. But some of the information that Neely mentioned, the number of other conferences that we speak at, perhaps we can do a better job of just raising the visibility of that. So when we receive speaker requests and those speaker requests are granted, we're going to publish that information on our website. So you'll be able to go to the IFRS Foundation website and see what activities we have planned where there are board members speaking in different parts of the world. And consistent with the discussion earlier on about education, we're really going to look to expand how we use digital communication channels. So that's, I think last year was the first year we actually hosted a full online conference. And we're going to make greater use of connecting to conferences and events through video conferencing, Skype, that sort of channel.
Thanks, Mark. And then the final recommendation relates to timeliness. And when we talk about timeliness, there's really three components to it, I think. There's just lack of familiarity with our process, which to a large extent I think can be addressed through improved communication. There's concerns that the process is slow, And then there are concerns that there are delays in the process, so that when we have a deadline in the work plan, it then shifts and it's difficult to rely on whatever timing that we do provide. So the action plan here is focusing primarily on those latter two issues, that the process is slow and that that there are delays in the process. A couple of things, as I already alluded to, is that we're taking a hard look at the standard setting process, looking for opportunities to re-engineer the process where we can. Key to that is a point that you'd raised in October, is that we're not looking to limit or shorten our stakeholder engagement. That is critical to high quality standard setting, and that's really not something on the table. This is more things around the edges in terms of how we pull together comments, or how the production process works, or how we think about whether do we go to a discussion paper or do we go to an exposure draft, and what's the best path forward in a particular project. And then there's also looking at technology as opportunities to gain some additional efficiencies in the process. The other piece of this is an update to the due process handbook, which Richard had talked about earlier today. And then the second piece, addressing delays, one of the fundamental things that we're in the process of doing is putting together a detailed project-by-project timeline that goes through sort of every step of the way. What are the resource needs? What's the estimated timing? When is it going to go before the board? And then layering on all the other activities that we do, so conferences, stakeholder engagement, any sort of internal activities like the premises move, to give us a good feel for what's a reasonable time frame. And then if something new comes up, is it a must-have or a nice-to-have? And then if it is a must-have, then what does that do to our deadlines? And then how does that affect not only that particular project, but all the other projects thereafter? And the idea behind this, obviously, is to help us plan better, but also to be able to answer the question that you all had asked in October of, if there is a change in timing, what's driving that change in timing? And then the final piece is really just making sure that we have everybody focused on those priority projects. And I think that's really been a lot of the backdrop of what we've been talking about today, that we have limited resources. So we appreciate all the help and the feedback that you've been able to give us in terms of what the priorities are and how we can get the most bang for our buck. So thank you.
Thank you, Neely and Hans. Any questions or comments in terms of those presentations? And I'm aware that you haven't seen those presentations or the slide packs, is that the information was obviously in the detailed paper that we had in our packs. Any questions or comments? Nope. Okay. Oh, yes.
I was wondering if the timing was good or not, but 45 minutes ago, I received an email saying that, if you remember, I mentioned to that group that the International Actuarial Association was preparing actuarial standard to accompany FIRS 17. Well, the exposure draft is now out. So.
And Mary, is that you with your card up, or is...
That was Michelle.
That was Michelle. Okay. All right. Sorry. As I say, my eyesight is appalling. Okay, if there are no other comments, and we will all now go to bed tonight with a copy of the actuarial standard in relation to IFRS 17 for those of us who need something to send us to sleep. However, this next session